PFT Media.
As the spring thaws over here in 2021, we're going to look at how the thawing of spring in 1904 caused the Russians some serious problems in the Russo-Japanese War here on Half True History. Welcome to Half True History, where we take the legends of yesterday, mix them with the facts of today, and come up with a pretty good story that I think you might enjoy. I am your professor for tonight, Dan P. And controlling the airwaves, of course, is our super producer, Chris Crespo.
What is up, everyone?
And finally, ever vigilant, the babushka to my matryoshka.
I don't know that. Right up, yo.
It's a difficult word to say. So.
Babushka. Yeah. It's a good word, though.
Babushka's good. That's old woman, usually grandma. And that's why they call them the babushka dolls. Yeah, little wooden dolls with everyone in it. It starts with the matriarch and then goes throughout the family. Uh-huh. Yeah. That was a thing. So, how y'all doing? Springtime, right? For everyone else?
Is it spring there?
Yeah, is it springtime? Because I don't know what dimension are you in?
I mean, I don't know. There's flowers, so I assumed it was springtime.
This is ridiculously cold.
Texas was frozen a week and a half ago.
Yeah. You know, I really enjoyed the irony there. Like, I couldn't have asked for better.
Oh, yeah. You know how Texas gets their heat back? If they murder Ted Cruz.
Or at least shave him.
Oh, please, someone shave him.
Make that beard an offering that to the gods.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, that beard has to go. Maybe murdering. Maybe edit that part out because I don't want the Secret Service to come out here.
Satire, allegedly.
Yeah. Don't really. I mean,
come on.
He was just kidding. Just kidding.
Somebody wants to go out there and do it.
No, come on.
Shave the beard. Just shave that thing off. So yeah, I have never. Seen a natural disaster where I had so little sympathy for the subject. Yeah, I mean, I have sympathy for the people, obviously, but the subject. I was like, no, really, this is, you asked for this.
Yeah, the company, they overbill everyone mm-hmm. with their Uber-style surge pricing. And
well, what it is, what is it? Did I talk about this the last time?
You mentioned it a little bit. Actually. Yeah,
the east, there's an eastern grid, there's a western grid, and Texas says, nah, we got our own grid.
Right, that's what it was.
So they deregulate, and then they offer these wholesale packages mm-hmm. that the demand's not that high, then you get lower prices and stuff like that, and people are great, but they never want to read that fine line. Mm.
So you're saying, now that I've gotten the one price a month offer from Duke, I need to really read that thing, huh?
Do you have fixed bill or budget billing?
They offered me the fixed bill.
So, call me later and I'll explain it to you. I'm not going to do it here.
Yeah. Well, you know, the weather is a little bit crazy. Winter jumps up on us, spring jumps up on us, and then suddenly it's 80 degrees again on Friday in Florida.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know? And you really just, you don't know what preparations to make. And that's exactly, brings us to our topic here about probably one of the most game-changing wars of the 20th century. And it's very little known. It's the first time that the Russians are going to square off with the Japanese.
Oh, shit. They fought?
Yeah. Yeah. Russo-Japanese.
I bet Japanese and Chinese fought all the time. Or Japanese-Korean. Or Korean and China. But I didn't know Japan went after Russia.
Uh-huh. That's because they were both going for Korea.
Weren't they boys, though? At one point during the World War II?
No, they were never boys during World War II. They were on opposite sides. I mean, they were boys, I guess, for like a year until Hitler betrayed Stalin.
Okay.
Yeah. But the Japanese have always been kind of leery of the Russians, especially once the Russians start moving further and further to the east, you know, establishing Alaska and all that stuff. Japanese always considered themselves masters of the Pacific.
Well, they do hang out there on that rim of fire.
Right.
It's so as specific as it gets.
Yeah.
Charlie Hunnam's out
there. So, yeah, just like two Godzilla monsters, they're both descending on Korea. Then they see each other and start fighting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But one of them is, it's got the bearskin hat.
Yes. But he's not the QAnon shaman.
No, thank God. No.
No, that guy flipped. That guy flipped like a bitch.
Uh-huh.
Jesus Christ! Not even a day in the clink, and that motherfucker's crying about veggie sandwiches in prison. I wish they would have let him out in Gen Pop, where mothers are making grilled cheese sandwiches under a mattress. And this guy wants a vegan option on his meal plan.
Yep.
And then he flips. Like, flips on, like, so quick. Like, first 48-hour flip. Like, before the show's over, he just, I'm good. I'll confess, whatever you want.
Uh-huh.
But it worked, because didn't they move him to somewhere where he got his, like...
He did get his meal. He did get his diet and veggies.
He did get his meal, yeah, because he called mommy, and mommy...
His mom complained, yeah. Haircut.
I like how, you know, I always find it hilarious how the left gets labeled as snowflakes. And these imbeciles, like, cry over everything. Everything. They're crying over the Dr. Seuss books that nobody was even reading.
Yep.
And that's a tactic, bro. Because Dr. Seuss, listen, bro, they con these idiots. Dr. Seuss says he self-snitched over his stupid books that nobody watches or was reading or mm-hmm. they were canceled a long time ago.
Yeah.
Then these idiots decided to buy The Lorax and all these other books for kids. Boom! Dr. Seuss made money, and it had nothing to do with those books.
Yep. Yeah.
Now they're crying about this rapey skunk that I've always hated when I was a kid, because I'm like, yo, that's a little bit excessive how this skunk is like molesting this poor cat.
I also thought that he had been dropped a few years ago anyway, when Looney Tunes had been relaunched. Like, they just did a whole season of new Looney Tunes. Yo, yeah. Sammy Sam doesn't have his guns. He uses dynamite. I don't think Elmer Fudd has a shotgun or rifle anymore, but he's still speaking with a stutter, which is interesting. And they don't have any...
Why are people being upset that Lola Bunny has a different body? Like, how many rabbiters are in this world that are so upset about the change on a cartoon body?
I don't know.
That's disturbing, dude. That there's people going, oh, how dare you change the body of, yo, if she's, it's 20, how many years? 40 years since the Space Jam came out?
25?
30.
She should be dead.
Yeah.
She should be technically dead. At least they age her to like a mom body, kind of a little bit. You know what I mean? They give her little fat ankles.
All good. Yeah.
People are weird, man. What are you gonna do?
People really are man.
People are very strange.
You know, it's that type of like entitlement.
I'm sorry.
No, but that's great because it's that type of entitlement and like delusions of superiority that gets Russia into this mess with Japan.
Going over the top on certain things, you mean?
Oh, you know, it's at this point, no European nation had lost to an Asian country yet in history.
Oh, they were undefeated.
Right. Now, that wasn't very often that the Asians would clash with the Europeans, but the times that they did, so far, Europe's been racking up the points.
Oh, this is like a Tyson versus Buster Douglas type fight in Tokyo, nonetheless.
And this is all lining up with industrialization, imperialism. You know, everyone's grabbing colonies and such. And Russia's trying to get ahead, or at least trying to catch up to Britain and France and Germany and all of them, because Russia started off a little bit late.
Why it take them longer? Just because of how remote it is and the lack of people?
In general, technology and progressive thinking in Russia has always been the last guy on the train.
That's interesting.
And it's always been that way. So they don't start industrializing. They don't really start building railroads until like 1885, 1890 is when they start building railroads.
Wow.
Yeah. And the czar at the time, Nicholas II, the last czar of Russia, he basically gets this guy, his minister secretary, Sergei Vit. He's like, okay, yeah, we need to industrialize. Make us like Britain in like a couple years, okay? And just leaves him to this impossible task.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're on the rush. They're trying to keep up with everyone else. And their goal now is to start building their Pacific fleet. They've already got a decent fleet enough in St. Petersburg and the Atlantic. They control in the North Sea, the Baltic Sea. They got that part. But now they want to find coastal territory on the Pacific that they can keep their naval base open all year long. And that's really hard with Russia because the only naval base they have right now is Vladivostok, all the way in the west, Vladivostok. But that's only good in the spring and summertime. And then the harbor freezes up, so they need warm water so they can have a year-round navy base. And the spot they want to go to is a place that they have named Port Arthur, just right on the border of northern China, Manchuria, and Korea. Right there on the bay to be able to get warm water access. And that was their whole goal there.
And who technically, is it technically Korean if it's on the border?
Yeah, who owns it?
Technically, it's, geographically, it's Korea. Technically, it's China because it's part of the Qing Dynasty at this point. But China by 1904, 1905, as we've discussed before, they're kind of done with standing up to Europeans. We've seen it over and over again. They've lost twice in the Opium War. Then they tried the Boxer Rebellion and that failed. So China's perfectly okay if you just want to take their land at this point if you're European. They're really done combating that. So with that power vacuum that China leaves, Japan is finally seeing an opportunity to really seize some mainland Asia territory to expand their empire. And so they just want all of Korea. I mean, that's their goal. They want all of Korea, all of Manchuria. They think that should belong to them. And then right in the middle of their plans is this Russian railroad heading over to Port Arthur. Now, as far as Japan goes, Japan had been industrializing early on. And I think we did a whole episode on Japanese industrialization. We talked about the Meiji Restoration.
Yes.
So yeah, we're talking about since the 1870s, they've been industrializing. So they got a good at least 15 to 20 years on the Russians. But nobody really knows that because nobody is paying attention to Asian culture. It's all about us. We think we're white, we're the best. Well, you know, we Europeans haven't lost yet. And so the Russians really get on this boat. The Russians are basically that guy at the office that talks about a professional sports team like he's on it.
Like, oh man, we're going to win this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah, that we.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. that's Russia. It's like, bro, you haven't done anything. That's all been all England. But yeah, they think they're part of this European unstoppable community. And Japan has totally industrialized. Like they didn't, it wasn't a joke. It was almost overnight. The government decided they were going to take control of everything. They were going to use all their money to build every railroad, every factory, every post office, everything you needed for a modern industrial society. And then they just sold it to the private corporate owners at cost value so that no one had to take out foreign loans. And that was the, so Japan is like, it's industrialized and it's independent. It's nobody is messing with it. And the only one who really like suspects just how powerful the Japanese have become is the United States. Because we have an interest in the Pacific at the same time. And obviously we want to take care of our precious Guam.
Oh, Guam. What was the point of Guam?
We needed a base in the Pacific.
That's it?
Yeah, and we tried to keep the Philippines, and the Filipinos said no. So we fell back and stayed on Guam and American Samoa.
I always found this interesting, then. So most of Russia is in Asia, right?
Yeah.
But they're Europeans?
Most of the Russian civilizations are on the western side, like the big cities.
Okay.
And Catherine the Great, when she gets Russia powerful enough, she basically has enough influence to redraw the borders of Europe to include everything west of the Ural Mountains. So, yeah. After Catherine the Great, then it becomes European. Up until then, they were still seen as the Easterners by the rest of Europe.
And Eastern Russia is more like Siberia, right? Where it's like just north of Mongolia and stuff like that.
Right. Siberia, Kamchatka, just frozen solid wasteland for most of the year. A few native tribes actually live there, but they were more Mongol than they were Russian. Mm-hmm. So there's tensions. And Russia is used to, and this, I guess, this should have been a warning. Some people call this war World War Zero, because this was going to be a warning about how things were going to go for the first part of the 20th century. No one paid attention to it, but like all the signs were there. Russia is expecting Japan to make some kind of declaration, official and signed, like all the other Europeans do when it's time for war. They're waiting for the declaration. They're egging them on and everything like that. And Japan, in 2020 hindsight, no surprise, just decides to torpedo attack one of their harbors.
Wow. Ninja style, baby.
And that's their declaration of war.
Actual war is our declaration of war.
Yeah. Two ninjas right there.
You know, it's not surprising with the Japanese. We see it again later in 1941. But yeah, they've been telling you since the beginning, yo, we're not signing papers.
Hero! Hero!
And so the war begins in 1904, the Russo-Japanese War, and the Russians, again, they come out with all their men and, you know, they've got hundreds of thousands of soldiers just throw at the Japanese. And dude, they get crushed.
Really?
They don't win one major battle.
Is it mostly a land war or is it a lot of naval battles?
Both. they get a couple, they win a few little skirmishes on the Navy here and there, and, you know, maybe capture a submarine or stop a cruiser, but the really big ones to take land, the Japanese just walk right through them.
These idiots are throwing like catapults and the Japanese are shooting torpedoes.
Oh yeah. It's they, and then another thing that was going on, because Russia at this time was considered one of the biggest threats in the world because it was so big and it had expanded so much.
Mm-hmm.
Its military was so large that by just sheer size and everything, everyone thought this was going to be a sure victory for the Russians. And everyone was scared that Russia was going to eventually take Japan and just make this Pacific army and no one's going to be able to stop them. So, you know, it's like, you know, it's that heavyweight fighter with the glass jaw that nobody knows about. Everyone expects him to just take it.
Yeah.
And then a little Sakuraba over here.
Oh, the Gracies and Sakuraba.
Yeah.
Crespo, you got to watch that, dude.
You gotta send me a link.
So Sakuraba is this little, you know, chunky little Japanese guy, and the Gracies have been running you know about the Gracies?
Yes, I know about the Gracies.
Rampant through the whole MMA thing. So Sakuraba goes, hey, "Yeah, I'll fight you guys," and he becomes the literal Gracie killer.
Yep.
He beats Gracie after Gracie. Like they started like throwing Gracie that they can find at.
Yep.
Dude,
yeah. And yeah, their number. Does he have a bunch of schools opened around the country? It's strip.
No, dude, he was a professional wrestler.
Yeah, he did it in between smoke breaks.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome.
Dude, you see him and be like, "Wait, this guy did it?"
That's like the Tank Abbott school of fighting.
Oh.
It was, yeah. And basically, just like Sakuraba, like, didn't give any care about any of the Gracie holds, the Japanese just walk right through the Russian army. Like, it's nothing.
Yeah. Sakuraba jumped on top of a Gracie in one of the fights.
Yeah.
Like, the Gracie was laying on the ground, like, come on, get on here. And he, like, jumped on him like Mario stomping on a turtle.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'll look it up. I'll look all that stuff up.
Mm-hmm. So, they just are technologically superior. And they offer Russia a chance to get out in the beginning. Like, they sucker punch them. They win a few battles, and they're like, look, guys, we don't have to do this. Just give up the port. But Russia wasn't about to be humiliated as the only European nation to lose to an Asian country. And so Tsar Nicholas II, not only does he continue the war, he arrogantly decides he's going to personally be the commander-in-chief of all the army of Russia and oversee the whole thing. He wants to impress his grandmother, Victoria, on who the best cousin was. And the Japanese just keep shelling them, artillery shell after artillery shell. They didn't have enough artillery. The Japanese just kept bringing it, just basically bombarding them first and then coming in and wiping them out with the troops. It was blitzkrieg before blitzkrieg. It was a tactic Napoleon had used. And the Japanese knew that because the Japanese army earlier on had been trained by the French army. Emperor Meiji had sent army officials and generals to go to the French and learn how the army was organized and read military history. And they worked with the Germans and the French to make this fighting force. Yeah.
And why would they so freely like let another country's like army people come in and be like, oh yeah, sure, here are.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, be an intern.
Two reasons. One, trade negotiations. And two, everyone was secretly hoping that Japan was going to keep the Russians in check.
Oh, okay.
So nobody wanted to like step up to the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
And they just went to the little Asian kid in the break room and be like, you're the one.
They worked
you're
them the up.
Chosen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, listen, you're going to do this. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, let's let this guy do it.
Yeah, come on. Let's psych him up.
Yeah. And the British start financing Japan and start giving and start lending them like a few months before the war begins, the British start dropping off their old inventory. They had to get some new fleet stuff. And so all these old British ships, and by old, I mean maybe like 2 or 3 years old, end up in the Japanese Navy.
Oh, they just hand them over.
Yeah, sold them to at a very, very pretty cost.
Here you go. Here you go, chaps. Some cheap ships for you.
Yeah. So it's such a setup from the beginning. And Nicholas II has no idea what he's doing. He is the Zap Brannigan of military commanders. And he just believes throwing Russian after Russian brigade is going to win him the day. And then there's the transportation problem. Russia only has one railroad at this time. And they have to get it all the way from St. Petersburg and Moscow. They have to go all the way across the country to get to Korea to supply the Russian army. They start building. The problem is they start building a lot of the stuff in the winter.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Especially over frozen lakes.
Oh, that's not smart.
They get to the point where they have to, they even get to parts where they have to like stop building the tracks because they know it'll break the lake. And then they attach the train to horses, and the horses pull the train across the frozen lake to the next part where the tracks continue.
So they just like forego the tracks.
Yeah.
They sacrifice the horses.
Now, officially, there are no records of Russian trains breaking through the ice and falling into the lake and dying.
All right.
But according
to officially, there's a choo-choo station in the bottom of the lake.
And the Japanese, they got savage with the propaganda as soon as they saw it. Like, they start sending out cartoons about how the Russians are falling over their feet. All they do is they have giant murals of this train breaking through the ice and Russians dying in the cold water. And they even report it out loud, like, to everyone about the crash. And they're like, you know, we were trying to help the Russian soldiers, but they were so scared of us, they'd rather drown. So it's just, they took every opportunity to make the Russians look like a fool. The war lasts a year. It's over by 1905.
That's pretty quick for for wars, you know.
Yep. And Russia has to be told to surrender. Like, he really was gonna not throw in the towel and go all the way. And Teddy Roosevelt and the other Western powers have to be like, dude, we're calling this. We're gonna set up the meeting. You're done.
War intervention.
Right.
Stop killing your people. It's not worth it. You're not going to win.
1,000 Russians die in this 1 year.
Wow.
Yeah. I think the Japanese, the Japanese suffer heavy casualties because the Japanese are always known for their fighting spirit and running into things. But even then, it's about 40 or 50,000. So for every one Japanese soldier, 2 Russians die.
Wow.
So it was a rough war, a very savage war, and it showed the world that Japan's got to be someone that we keep an eye out for. What's amazing is nobody takes that warning. They see what Japan does, and then they see what Japan does to Germany in World War I with the German islands in the Pacific. And still, when it comes time to form the League of Nations and everything and put them in the treaty, they ignore the Japanese. They ignore equal rights for all races and countries. They just keep pissing the Japanese off. Until, yeah.
They provoke them into
until it takes 2 atomic bombs to put them down.
To calm them down. Hey, but they spring up right back up, dude.
Yeah, man. Oh, yeah. Post-war economic miracle. They don't care.
Nintendo came out of that.
Mm-hmm. The Russians, Nicholas II was so bad at what he was doing that the generals barely listened to him. And there were reports of constantly squandering funds on non-military essentials by the generals because they're like, you know, F him. We don't care. We'll do what we want. When the Japanese finally bombard and take Port Arthur, which is the, you know, the main port we're fighting over, pretty much ends the war as soon as they take Port Arthur. The Japanese get into the storerooms and open up all the boxes in the warehouses. Because they're expecting to take the Russian ammo and shells and things like that and all of the materials. Now, there might be some exaggeration to this, but not much. Apparently, a majority of the supply boxes were filled with bottles of vodka.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow, I probably was going to have something cool. It's just like their supplies, pretty much.
That's an essential supply.
Yeah, the generals just kept ordering vodka. It became so of the norm that became part of the Russian soldiers' supply pack. And about they estimate maybe about 27% of their consumption was just vodka during the war, which probably says a lot about their performance as well.
Yeah, they're sending them out there all lit up, hammered into battle.
The place with courage.
I mean, you probably want to have most of your wits about you, right?
Somewhat, right? Yeah. And, you know, I guess Nicholas expected that money to go to weapons of some sort and not bottles and bottles of vodka.
Scuba gear.
In a way, vodka is the weapon.
I mean, right? Yeah. The Molotovs.
There's also that as well. Yes, yes, yes.
But, you know, vodka don't mean anything to people who drink sake.
Yeah.
That's brake fluid.
That's true.
And yeah, that's the Japanese-Russian war. It's over super quickly. It's the biggest humiliation, and it's the start of the fall of the Romanov dynasty.
I'm pretty sure Russia don't like to talk about it, huh?
Mm-mm. And there's a rebellion right afterwards in Russia in 1905 that you are probably very familiar with, Crespo, involving the battleship Potemkin.
Ah, yes, they made a movie about that. Very, what, 1920, something like that, maybe earlier.
Right.
Yeah.
I believe it was 1920s because it was a Soviet propaganda film.
Oh, there we go. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the palm ripped off the end for The Untouchables.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
So. Where he ripped up the ending?
In The Untouchables, there's a scene where a baby carriage is in slow motion going down some stairs while there's a shootout happening. And that happened in this Battleship Potemkin film.
There was a baby in the battleship?
No, it happens on a big like a staircase.
Yeah, what the movie is about is what the revolt is about is that all these sailors from the battleship called Potemkin get tired of the mismanagement and they've been eating nothing but rotten meat and everything, and they blame the Tsar for losing the war and for treating them like crap, and so they rebel with this thing. They go to the city of Odessa.
That's what they call it when you rebel in a boat.
Mutiny.
Mutiny.
Yeah, mutiny. They take over and they get the people of the city and stuff to rebel too. And then they have a shootout with the Russian army on the big steps of the city. And that's the scene in the movie.
So there's a shootout and a woman loses the control of her baby carriage and it's going. And it, so it's cutting between the shooting and the baby carriage and like that kind of editing or whatever, that kind of scene work at the time was like revolutionary, like Soviet revolutionary stuff. Now we just, you know, we see it in Mountain Dew commercials. Yeah, but
they didn't have Andy Garcia. You got him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got him.
Yeah, I got him. Oh, he's so good in that. That's such a great movie.
It's such a great movie.
Yeah.
So I guess the moral of the story is, you know, never doubt the quiet kid in the corner.
Yep. Keep your eyes on the Japanese.
Uh-huh. You know what? Don't call people snowflakes unless you can back it up.
Yeah.
Or else they'll thaw you out.
And take your vodka.
Take your vodka. Thanks again for listening, everyone, to another great Half True History. Please keep listening to us. Keep liking us on, I think, anywhere you can download a podcast, we're available. And where do most of our listens come from? Crespo, do you know that?
Florida, I would say, for sure. Yeah.
Like what?
Florida? Yeah. What device? Spotify, right. Google Cast?
Apple is always number one.
Okay.
Spotify is popping up in number two, as number two a lot.
Nice.
And some people just go straight to pftmedia.com because I see a lot of just like web browsers, Chrome, Safari, stuff like that.
Nice. So, yeah, keep in touch with us, all the PFT families. Everything going well with everyone, too?
Yes, everything's going strong, going well. We have new seasons of a few of the shows in the works. So
they got their shops?
Some people got the shots. Some people don't. Everyone go get your shots. Rabies, measles, COVID, all of it.
You know, once, and we'll talk about this a little bit later off the show, but once we get into this nice, like, vaccinated age, I would really love to do a few episodes every now and then with Cinema Crespediso and Half True History, where we do like a riff tracks on a historical movie.
Yeah.
And just we'll do like the full thing and talk about different instances and things like that, and people can play it when they watch the movie.
Something readily available. Facts?
Yeah, like I'll give historical facts and then you guys can just kind of make fun of it.
All right.
As necessary.
Braveheart, the most historical factual movie there is.
I'm not sure I could finish before the movie does.
It's a 3-hour movie.
Yeah. Just get the good pieces.
Right. So, yeah, we'll do that. We'll do like the big scenes and stuff like that and just describe a couple of the problems.
Yeah, we could do that for sure.
All right, everyone out there, please stay safe. Wear your masks. Get your shots if you can. This has been Half True History. We hope to see you again next time, and we'll see you on the next page.
Peace.
Adios.
When you're the one left standing there, you've reached the final bell. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
A PFT Media production.